The Secret Garden by Frances Hodgson Burnett. Adapted into 8 episodes for audio as part of Wizard Presents The Secret Garden Experience. An adventure to share at home. Hi, I'm Dania Miller, Artistic Director of Wizard Presents, and I'm also a storyteller. I love keeping, and sometimes sharing, secrets. Like a secret wish or dream, or even a secret den. This is probably one of the reasons that The Secret Garden is one of my favourite stories. It was a book I read over and over again as a child. Maybe I connected with it so strongly because I was born and grew up in Yorkshire, running, climbing, playing on those moors that are described in the book. I had a secret place behind a big old tree in my granny's garden. My daughter loved to hear about my childhood. She particularly liked me to speak with a Yorkshire accent. And she also loved the story of The Secret Garden. So, when we were looking for a story to share with you, I came back and reread it. I was amazed that although it was written over 100 years ago, much of it felt so relevant and fresh. This is an incredible book. So, whether you've read the original many times or are coming to it for the very first time, I really hope you'll enjoy listening to this adaptation as much as we've enjoyed creating it. Episode 1. By the time Mary Lennox was 6 years old, everybody said she was the most bad-tempered and miserable child they'd ever met. The Lennox family lived in India, where Mary's father was an officer in the English government. Mary had been born there. Her father always seemed to be busy or ill, and her mother cared only to enjoy herself going to beautiful wild parties. She hadn't wanted a little girl at all, so she left Mary almost entirely with the servants to look after. As Mary grew up, she spent most of her time with her Ayah, who dressed her in the morning, told her mysterious and mystical stories, and sang her to sleep at night as she stroked her hand gently. Mary often played under a tree close to the house, and pretended to make a flower bed, sticking delicate hibiscus blossoms into little heaps of earth as her Ayah watched over her. Perhaps because of Mary's quick, nasty temper, the servants always obeyed her and let her have her own way in everything. But every governess who came to teach Mary disliked her rude ways so much that they left immediately. So Mary would never have learnt to read and write if she hadn't really wanted to. One particularly hot, sunny morning, when Mary was about 9 years old, she woke feeling very cross indeed. There was something strange in the air. Nothing was done in its usual order. Her Ayah didn't come to dress her. Several servants were missing, whilst others hurried about with scared faces. Mary had overheard her mother and a young officer on the veranda speaking urgently in low voices about the cholera, a disease which had apparently broken out in the servants' quarters. The young man had told Mrs. Lennox that she should have left for the hills weeks ago. Mary watched as her mother turned and ran quickly into the house, not giving her daughter a second's thought. You see, this fatal disease had broken out across the country, and people were dying like flies. In the Lennox household, many had taken ill in the night, and before the next day, 3 more servants were dead. Others had run away in terror. On the second day, Mary hid in her bedroom and was forgotten by everyone. Nobody thought of her or wanted her. Strange things happened around her, but all she knew was that she heard horrifying sounds. She was afraid and cried and slept throughout the long day. Once, when she was hungry, she crept into the empty dining room where she found some fruit and biscuits to eat and drank some sweet wine from a half-empty glass. It made her so drowsy that she lay down on her bed and fell asleep immediately. When she woke, the house was perfectly still and silent. As she couldn't hear anything, she wondered if everyone had got well and all the cholera trouble was over. Almost the next minute, she heard men's footsteps and voices close by. When the door opened into Mary's bedroom, she was standing in the middle of the room, frowning and cross because she was hungry and confused. The officers were shocked to see her and wondered who she was, all forgotten. "I am Mary Lennox. I fell asleep when everyone had the cholera and I have only just woken up. Why does nobody come?" She stamped her foot. "Why was I forgotten?" The officers felt sorry for her, knowing that there was nobody left to come. Mary was not a warm-hearted child and had never seemed to care for anyone. But it was in this strange and stark way that she found out that both her mother and father had died and been carried away in the night. Mary had hardly known her mother, although she'd often admired her from a distance, so it was not surprising that she didn't miss her very much when she was gone. If Mary had been older, maybe she would have been more anxious to hear this terrible news. But since she'd always been looked after by the servants, she assumed she always would be. She expected that there would be a new Aya, and perhaps she would know some new stories. The officers arranged that Mary was to be sent to England, to Misselthwaite Manor, to live with her uncle, Mr. Archibald Craven, whom she'd overheard being described as cross and grumpy, a man who cared for no one. Mary made the long sea journey under the care of an officer's wife, who was rather glad to hand her over to Mrs. Medlock, Mr. Craven's housekeeper at Misselthwaite Manor. Mrs. Medlock had been sent by Mr. Craven to meet her in London. He had told his housekeeper very little before she packed her bags and set off. Only this: "Captain Lennox and his wife died of cholera. Captain Lennox was my wife's brother, and I am their daughter's guardian. The child is to be brought here." Mrs. Medlock was a stout woman, with very red cheeks and sharp black eyes. Mary didn't like her at all, but as she seldom liked people, there was nothing strange in that. Besides, it was very obvious Mrs. Medlock didn't think much of her.
"My word, she's a plain little piece of goods. And we'd heard that her mother was so beautiful. She hasn't handed much down, has she, ma'am?" she'd said to the officer's wife.
Since Mary had been without her Aya to look after her, she'd started to feel lonely. She wondered why she'd never seemed to belong to anyone. Even when her mother and father had been alive, she'd never seemed to be their little girl. She'd had servants, food, clothes, but no one had really cared for her. She didn't know that this was because they thought her bad-tempered and unpleasant, but then, of course, she didn't know she was unpleasant. She often thought other people were. She thought Mrs. Medlock was the most unpleasant person she'd ever seen. And when she walked through the station to the train, she tried to keep as far away from Medlock as she could. She didn't want to seem to belong to her. Mrs. Medlock was not in the least bothered by her or her thoughts. She was the kind of woman who would stand no nonsense from children. Mary sat in her black dress in the corner of the train carriage looking miserable, her hair straggling from under her black felt hat. She had nothing to read or to look at, so she folded her thin little black-gloved hands in her lap. Mrs. Medlock began to talk in a brisk manner.
"Well, I suppose I may as well tell you something about where you're going to. Have you heard your mother and father talk about him?"
"No."
Mary frowned because neither of her parents had ever talked to her about anything in particular.
"Well, you're going to a strange place."
Mary said nothing. And although Mrs. Medlock was surprised by her lack of interest, she continued anyway.
"Not but that it's a grand big place in its gloomy way, and Mr. Craven proud of it in his. The house is 600 years old and it's on the edge of the moor, and there's near on 100 rooms in it, although most of them's shut up and locked. And there's pictures and fine old furniture and things that's been there for ages. And there's a big park and gardens and trees, but there's nothing else. Well, what do you think of it?"
It sounded so unlike India, or anything that Mary knew, that she'd begun to listen in spite of herself. She was curious about her uncle and where he lived, but she had no intention of seeming interested, so she sat still.
"Nothing. I know nothing of such places."
"But you're like an old woman. Don't you care?"
"It doesn't matter if I care or not."
"You're right there, it doesn't. What you'll be kept at Misselthwaite Manor for, I don't know. Unless it's because it's easiest way. He's not going to trouble himself about you, that's sure and certain. He never troubles himself about no one. He's got a crooked back that set him wrong. He was a sour young man and he got no good of his money and big place till he got married."
Mary's eyes turned towards her in spite of her intention not to care. She'd never thought of him being married and was surprised.
She was a sweet, pretty thing, and he'd have done anything for her. Nobody thought that she'd marry him,
but she did.
And people said that she married him for his money, but she didn't. She did not. When she died,
Mary was startled, suddenly feeling sorry for her uncle, and burst out quite without meaning to.
"Oh, did she die?"
"Yes, she died. And it made him odder than ever. He cares about nobody. He won't see people. Most of the time he goes away, or else he shuts himself up in that west wing. You needn't expect to see him, because 10 to 1 you won't."
It sounded like something in a fairy tale. A house on the edge of a moor with 100 rooms, nearly all shut up and their doors locked. A man with a crooked back who shut himself up. It all sounded really dreary. If his wife had been alive, she might have made things cheerful, like her own mother. But she'd gone too.
"And you mustn't expect that there'll be people to talk to. You'll have to play about and look after yourself. You'll be told what rooms you can and can't go into. There's gardens enough. But when you're in the house, don't you go wandering and poking about. Mr. Craven won't like it."
"I won't go poking about."
Mary suddenly stopped feeling sorry for Mr. Archibald Craven, thinking instead that he was horrid enough to deserve everything that happened to him. She turned her face towards the window and stared out. The rain was splashing and streaming down the window panes, looking as if it would go on forever. She watched it so long and steadily that her eyes began to grow heavy and she fell asleep.
It was quite dark when the train stopped at the station. Mrs. Medlock was shaking her awake.
We're at Thwaite Station. Come on. We've got a long drive in the carriage now.
When Mary was sitting in the corner of the horse-drawn carriage, she looked out of the window, curious to see where she was going. She wasn't exactly frightened, but she felt that there was no knowing what might happen to her. She suddenly asked, "What's a moor?"
"Look out of the window in about 10 minutes and you'll see. We've got to drive 5 miles across Misselmoor before we get to the manor. You won't see much because it's a dark night. But it's just miles and miles of wildland where nothing grows but heather and gorse and broom. It's a dreary enough place to my mind, though there's plenty that likes it."
As Mary looked out of the window, she caught glimpses of whitewashed cottages. The lights from a pub, a church, and a little shop window. At last, the horses began to slow as they climbed uphill, until she could see nothing but darkness on either side. She pressed her face against the window just as the carriage gave a big jolt, and Mrs. Medlock announced that this was the moor. Mary felt as if the drive would never end. "I don't like it," she said to herself, and her face grew stern. When they passed through the park gates, there were still 2 miles to drive. Eventually, they stopped in front of a huge, desolate house. At first, Mary thought that there were no lights in any of the windows. But then she saw that one room in the corner upstairs showed a dull glow. The thick oak entrance door was studded with big iron nails. It opened slowly into a massive candle-lit hall. Mary looked around at the armour-suited figures and the faces in the portraits on the walls. She stood on the stone floor, feeling small and lost and odd. Mrs. Medlock took Mary up a broad staircase, down a long corridor, up a short flight of steps, through another corridor and another, until she opened a door into a room with a fire in it and supper on the table. Mrs. Medlock said roughly,
"Well, here you are. This room and the next are yours. This is where you'll live, and you must keep to them. Don't you forget that."
It was in this way that Mary arrived at Misselthwaite Manor, and she had perhaps never felt quite so alone in all her life.